Hey, it's John Hamm. I got here early and set my tech up very quickly, so of course I'm waiting for three idiots. Welcome to Smartless. Smart.
Oh my God, that gives me, is that Yaz?
Yeah, yeah. Yaz it
that
is.
That brings me back to, I went to Chicago once to work the phones at a charity or a telethon.
Jason, what have you done with my Jason?
Yeah, and I met a girl there and she was also working the phones and we fell in love.
And?
And I was 15 and I went back home. I talked to my mom about this love I fell in with this girl in Chicago for a whole full week. She said, why don't you go back and see her? I'll take you. I'll go with you. I was like, great. My mom and I got back on a plane the following weekend, went back to Chicago, and I had the most—
Because you told her you fell in love with a girl?
Yeah, working the phone banks with me at this telethon, and we had a magical weekend, and that was that. All we listened to was Yaz the whole weekend.
Yeah, Only You. It's one of the best songs ever. Now, Jason, did you know that the guy who wrote all those Yaz songs wrote all those Erasure songs and wrote Depeche Mode songs?
Really?
Vince Clark.
Not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yeah, a bunch of them. Well, Vince Clark was the writer of Yaz, and then he went to Depeche Mode and wrote, you know, Just Can't Get Enough and all those kind of songs. Then he left Depeche Mode and went to Erasure and wrote all the
songs. So now let me ask you this. Sean, you might know that. You probably do. The name of the lead singer of Yaz, what was her name?
Alison Moyet.
Wow. Yeah, again, I said you may know this, but yeah, okay.
Well, do you guys...
Well, don't give Jason a... Yeah, go ahead.
Did you guys know what the music festival was where... Queen,
love this new game show we have.
Queen was the headliner, and Yaz led in for them. It was called Yaz Queen, it predated Lollapalooza.
I can't believe I'm laughing at that. So stupid.
Look
at a
good one.
Yaz Queen.
Even right. A stopped clock. Right?
I want to ask you guys what the worst trouble in you got as a kid, because here's why. Because whenever I'm like 5 minutes late to rehearsal, however late I'm in rehearsal here in Chicago, you know, I feel like you get in trouble like I was a kid. So I was talking to Scotty about that. And Scotty's like, I asked Scotty, what's the worst trouble you got in as a kid? Scotty got his mouth washed out with soap from the nuns in Catholic school. He was about 6 or 7 years old. And he got in trouble because he was making fart noises on his arm in the bathroom.
Oh, boy.
And they literally took soap and they really literally scrubbed his mouth.
Why, they should have scrubbed his armpit.
Right.
But you know what he did?
With the soap.
He breathed in to make his mouth all dry so that it wouldn't suds up. You under our guest or?
I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
Wait, what are you trying to?
Will, can you top Scotty's Scotty's dry wash?
I mean, there have been a lot of stories of heroes over the years, and that is really people really. When their back's against the wall, forced to come up with, right?
I love the way Scott outsmarted them.
Yeah.
You know, there's no fluid in my mouth, so you will not get suds, ma'am.
But I always thought that was like a not real thing, that you got your mouth washed out with soap, but he got his mouth.
That once happened to me.
Right.
Yeah.
One time my mom went to hit me with a wooden spoon, true story. And I was in the kitchen, and I was being mouthy, I guess. I can't imagine how.
No, probably not.
And I was sweeping. I was holding a broom and I was sweeping and she went and I said something and she went to swat me with the wooden spoon and I put the broom up to block it and it broke the wooden spoon in half. My timing was perfect and it snapped it in half. And there was a moment of like, what just happened? And then we both burst into laughter.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, because you said you better step off.
Well, just because I was able to block her so easily. And
right.
Then, and
just
then
the,
I,
whole topic of, yeah. The whole topic of abuse in families is...
Well, she went to hit me on the butt with the wooden spoon, and I don't
next
know.
Time, does she come at you with a metal spatula? Because that's what I would have done. Would have learned my lesson.
You know, I know it. I guess these days, I don't even want to get into the broader conversation because.
Yeah. Well, no. Hang on a second. Let's talk about how you discipline your children and what you advocate for.
Yeah, I want to open that up, and I'd like to open it up to the world, and not only that, I want to hear their opinions on it.
You would never do anything.
No, of course not.
Guys, here we go.
Hi.
Ready? Mind if I got a burp. I'm not going to burp right now.
Would this guest appreciate something like
that? He wouldn't care.
You didn't even wait for our answer. You said, do you mind if I burp? And then you just were going to do it. You didn't.
I was going to.
So why bother saying it? It's just.
Was it a false alarm? Because I didn't see you burp.
Yeah.
No, it came up. It was right on the, whatever this is, part of your throat is, but it didn't.
You are, I will say, after having been on the road with you for 10 days, almost 2 weeks.
I'm a burper.
You're quite a burper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You are a loud burper like me. You like to.
What?
Yeah, no. But you like to kind of yell your burps.
Well, Jason, you like to do the burp that's almost like is you pretend as if you're about to
throw up
and you go, right.
But I do the same thing.
I will say that to both of your credits, neither one of you have bubble problems from the other end.
No.
I don't have too many bubble problems. Bubble problems.
Mm-mm. From the other end.
Yeah.
This guy's amazing. I don't want to waste his time. He's received, guys, 16 Emmy nominations for one television show.
Huh.
Are you guessing off of that?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to say, so that's 16 years.
Well, no, it could be for other things.
It could be multiple.
Multiple.
It could be writing and producing. And
Sure. He's one of the rares that's known for both comedy and drama, and his films are some of the best ever made. This, I didn't know about him. He returned to his high school in St. Louis, Missouri, to teach eighth grade acting, and one of his students was Ellie Kemper. I didn't know that.
Really?
You guys love this, and I hope we talk about it for the entire episode. He's an avid golfer.
Uh-oh.
It's none other than the dashingly handsome, the talented...
Very relatable.
John Hamm.
What?
Did I get any of that right, John?
Yeah, you got it all right.
I did, really?
Him.
You have to say, I don't think I've ever been immediately put in a good mood from any of our previous guests.
It was a pretty low bar given the fart burp conversation that I stumbled onto. But
do you want to join in?
You just perked me up.
Hi, boys.
John.
What's happening, Ham?
It's been a minute. How you doing?
Oh, John.
The best or nothing.
Yes, you know,
we
want to
get
exactly.
A little mercy. We got three car guys on here. Sean.
Yeah, come on,
get
Sean.
Get a fucking car contract for Christ's
sake. Or how about a motorcycle, Sean? Let me hear you sell a Yamaha right now.
Okay, ready? Huh? Hey, guys, are you in a hurry? Get a Yamaha.
Wait, you're advocating. They're going to be like, no, we don't want to advocate for people to speed if you're in a hurry.
Hey, guys, pissed off at those dudes cutting line by going right in between your cars. Get a Yamaha.
Hey, guys, want to weave in and out of traffic?
Hey, we make musical instruments and motorcycles. That's not weird.
Hey, you can play our car.
Do you want to ride up to your baby grand in style? Hey, I wonder how many products Yamaha makes. They make musical instruments. They make pianos, obviously.
Yes.
They make guitars?
I know they make violins because I had one in third grade.
A Yamaha violin? I've never heard.
I believe I did.
Whoa.
How long did you play violin?
I think until about sixth grade.
And then?
And then it just got too, I could never really read music.
Yeah.
It got too complicated. I can still kind of do it from memory, like that weird long-term memory where you remember lyrics of songs, but like, you know, your mom's birthday somehow you forget. It's the weirdest thing how your brain.
Quick, what's your mom's birthday?
February 1st.
Oh, well, that's a good birthday. Who would forget
that's
that?
A very easy day.
Did you move on to a different instrument, or did you just say, screw it?
No, I think that's when, like, sports became kind of paramount, and I just did that.
What'd you jump into in sports?
Football, baseball, swimming, soccer, basketball, what have you. It was.
Were you kind of good at all of them?
I was better at football and baseball, but I was kind of good at a lot of stuff. This is the high school I went to. It says Burroughs Baseball. This is my baseball shirt from 10th grade.
Is that your actual 10th grade T-shirt?
Yeah, yeah.
From congratulations.
God, what brand is that? It's really holding up.
I think it's a Champion.
Will's high school T-shirt's now a beautiful midriff that he wears every once in a while.
It's turned into an homage to 90s Britney Spears.
Jason's high school T-shirt is a Warner Brothers lot tour shirt.
It's a tank, okay?
It's got a cap to match it.
It's from Upfronts. They came in after
it's
Alf.
From Upfronts.
Kind of
1988
did.
Upfronts.
Johnny, I didn't know that about high school, where you graduated with an English degree and then went back to your high school to teach it, because that's kind of like I'm one of the few people that loved high school. And clearly you
did
too.
I went to a really excellent high school, the aforementioned John Burroughs High School in St. Louis, Missouri. And we had like crazy, you know, we were encouraged to try everything. So it was like arts and sports and academics, and everybody was sort of encouraged to achieve and do well. And that sort of was the ethos of the whole joint. So, you know, you didn't have to be good at it, but you had to try. And that was the fun of it all. And getting exposed to like all of these different disciplines was really cool. And it wasn't, you know, there weren't like the jocks and the nerds and the Sportos or whatever the Edie McClurg thing from Ferris Bueller is of all of the gradations. They
nice
were all kind
call
of
call on Edie McClurg. Yeah,
come on. You gotta know McClurg. You gotta have McClurg at the top of the
I did a show with her for 5 years.
Did you really?
Love that woman, yeah. Hey, so but now John, don't be falsely modest here, but I've got you between the jocks and the nerds, I've got you heavier over on the jock side.
Yeah, the dial's twisted a little to that side for
you
sure.
You did very well in high school. Was that a fair statement?
Yeah, I graduated with honors, and yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is.
You did okay? Did you do okay. All right?
Yeah, okay.
Why do you keep winking at him?
It's not winking.
Did you, no, we're talking about sports. Did you score a lot?
Scored a lot of points.
Yeah.
Scored a lot of points. Played a lot of defense.
Did you put a lot in the
That's
bucket?
That's how good he was. He had to play a lot of defense.
Put a lot of balls in the basket.
I don't know where this metaphor is going.
Jason, has Amanda got you like on a no-fly list? What's going on right now? Are you not? What's going on?
Well then how did, all right. So then you start to feather in.
Jason, fix your hair.
I'm sorry. You start to feather in some theater, right?
Feather in some braid, theater. And then did you braid anything braid. In?
I don't have a lot of terms. Will's so tired of my shit.
I love
but
it.
But it's new to John. So be hush hush.
There's some theater feathering for sure.
Yeah. Did the jocks ostracize you for that? That's a new one, Will. I'm going to feather that one in. Did they ostracize you? And then did the nerds embrace and receive you?
Like I said, no, not really, because there was a real blend of, talk about feathering. We were, both groups were feathered together quite well.
Yeah.
And the jocks were all over. We did, the senior production, senior year production was Godspell. So,
of course.
And as in most high school productions, they were, you know, 35 roles, and they split up roles, and you would do half a song. And with the exception of me, who played Judas, and the kid who played Jesus. So, yeah, you know, it was fun and exciting, and it was, you know, it was something to do, and it was encouraged. So we all did it. It was fun.
If I looked at your high school picture, did you have luxurious hair?
I had a good flow in
89. Sure.
Real good flow.
Real salad, huh?
Bateman-esque, I would say.
Jason, I think Ham's giving you a run for your money. He's got a great flow.
He can have it. John wins every category with any man on the planet.
Look at him.
You know, you can't, you're foolish. You just chase the silver with him.
Listen,
that's it.
It's just nice to be nominated in any category.
Wait, Johnny, when you went back to teach at your high school, was there anybody still there that you knew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tons. Tons of teachers that I knew and loved. So it was kind of a trip.
Now teaching beside them?
Yeah. Yeah, they were now colleagues, which is really cool.
That's crazy.
And in fact, the guy who was pretty much responsible for me becoming a professional actor, giving me the encouragement and hiring me and got me my equity card eventually.
Wow.
I kind of taught under him as his, that was my pitch, was like, look, you're such a good teacher that you made this department like a fun thing to do. So you have way too many students. So you need a helper. And basically I'll be the like junior theater teacher if you'll have me. And they did.
And when was that?
I graduated college in 93. So this would have been 94, 95. And then I moved to LA in 95.
Wow.
I did too.
Okay.
Wow. Jeez, what a coincidence.
Okay.
Lower your eyebrows, Sean. Fuck. A lot of people hit the airport in 95 out here. Like a million a day.
I remember we auditioned up against each other all the time, Sean. So it was
all the time. Wait a minute.
Lost another one to
And
him.
Then I went on the 405. I was on the 405 too.
What car?
What exit did you get on?
Because I was on the 405.
Okay, wait.
I came here so long ago, it was the 404. Thank you.
Sushi, okay.
Wait a minute. Wait. Sorry, John. When we were on tour, Will or Jason, one of them came up.
It was Will.
The best pun in the history of puns.
Stupidest.
It was the dumbest.
We were eating Japanese
so
food.
Dumb. I kept going. I was too lazy to make dinner, so I ordered some Japanese food. Sashimi. It's so stupid. And we were so, punch drunk and tired, we couldn't stop laughing.
Oh, God, was that funny. I was crying real tears.
Ugh.
And we will be right back.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I am, I was going to say I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet. It's chewy. It's cool. It's creamy all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it. First of all, an absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
And now, back to the show.
John, would you ever consider doing something so generous as and loving and give back-ish as going as teaching your the eighth grade class again? Now that you got the 16 Emmys, this incredible career
nominations.
Nominations.
That's crazy. Is that the most nominations anybody's ever received for one show? It's got to be a record.
I don't think so.
It's crazy.
I think there's been, because they were kind of, they were for, eventually I became a producer on the show, so I got nominated for best show and things like that. But
you won 3 as an actor?
I won 1.
Oh.
I won 1 for the final season of Mad Men. But I was nominated, I think, as a guest star on SNL and on 30 Rock and a couple of things like that. So I think those have been lumped in there.
What'd you do with all the speeches? What'd you do with the 15 speeches you didn't use?
I still got them.
I bet you do.
Still got them right up here.
No, no. Did you memorize them or did you write them down?
No. I didn't write anything. I never wrote anything down ever.
You didn't have any sort of thoughts prepared? If I get up there, I want to make sure I don't forget to thank.
Honestly, no. I really didn't.
Jason, did you write a few of the times that you lost?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got a book. Yeah.
You did write them down.
Yeah.
I was an early adopter for when Bateman won. I was right there on, I'm probably number four on the text chain. Congrats, buddy.
John is incredibly
deserve it.
Supportive.
Love you.
Consistent.
Oh, fuck. You know what? That's a good point. Congrats, Jason.
What happened?
I know it's been a couple of years. No, you winning the Emmy. Sorry, I don't think I ever said anything.
Hey, better late than never.
Wait.
Sashimi.
Sashimi, all right?
You know what? Will can use the same joke again, another one from the tour, which was when I said to Jason, I got him golf balls for Christmas, like two sets of 18 golf balls each or something. And I said, did you ever get that? And he goes, yeah, I already had those. And Will goes, that's a twist on thank you.
Wait, what did I say? I already had those?
No, Sean, you said that you dropped them. I gave you like a couple boxes of golf balls. You came over to my house and I gave them to you. And Jason, you said, oh, yeah, I did get those. I said, well, that's a fun twist on thank you.
Robot. It's pronounced thank you.
I don't think that happened.
Back to Jason's question. Would you ever go back and teach now, John? Would you ever use that desire still there?
I sure would. I was offered a chance to extend my contract by another year. And I would have loved to have done it, but I was 24, turning 25 at the time, and I thought, well, maybe I'm at least going to try to do LA, see what happens. And you know, I did. And I really would, though. I found it tremendously fulfilling. I don't know what teaching is like now with phones and internet. This was pre-internet, pre-phone.
Well, that's what I was going to kind of ask, like what teaching would be like now for you, though, like you as an acting teacher then versus how you would teach acting now, not to get into acting weeds because we'll lose our one listener. But like as your whole theory about acting, like how would you teach the kids now? Would it be different?
It would probably be similar, if not identical. I would just have much more credibility as a 50-year-old rather than a 24-year-old guy trying to wear a tie.
Yeah.
What was the gig that you had? What was the job you had right before Mad Men?
I was kind of unemployed for like, I got a pilot, which I got fired off of. Mm-hmm. And then I tested for 7 other pilots the following pilot season and got none. I went all the way up to the top and then.
7 times. Oh my God.
So Mad Men was my 8th test that season. And it was crazy late in what used to be called pilot season because it was on AMC, which didn't really know how to do pilot season. So they just had a different schedule than everybody else. But I had tested 7 times and biffed them all. So my last job was a pilot that was called something that then went on to be called a show called Related with Lizzie Kaplan, Jennifer Esposito, and someone else. And I played the love interest of, God, why am I spacing on her name? She was in Pretty Woman with Julia Roberts.
San Giacomo?
Yes, Laura San Giacomo. So Laura San Giacomo was the eldest of 3 siblings, and I was her love interest. And and she killed herself on this pilot, and she was wonderful in it. And they forced her call every day, and she had a kid at home. It was like they treated her terribly. And then they fired her. And the powers that be said, you're out. And when they told me, they're like, but we like you, and you're going to stay. I was like, there's no part for that was my love interest. I don't have a person, and I'm not in the family, so it doesn't make sense. No. And they kept me. And I had to turn down another couple of jobs that now I was available for. And then they released my option on the last day and fired me. So that was my last gig before Mad Men.
That's so crazy. And what a change of perspective you have now on the other end of it. And we all know we've been there of just hearing you describe it brings almost like PTSD.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like you said, we've all had a version of that.
For sure.
Oh, this is going to go. Oh, it didn't. And then it's going to go in the
far worse way than ever possibly could have.
Yeah. Right. And a good example of, while it probably felt like hell at the time, had that show kept going, had they not fired you, you would have been unavailable to do Mad Men. So right. It was a great...
Yeah, everything happens.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason.
So you're saying look at the bright side of things, which I'm going to say I agree with.
There's plenty of fluid in that glass.
Johnny, I read somewhere that you, after Mad Men, you got offered like 800 parts where it took place in the 60s or some kind of same thing over and over and over and over again. But you were smart enough to wait for that one good thing. And what was that one thing?
Well, there's obviously, like, as soon as one thing hits, then there's five versions of that thing that come down the pike. And so for us, it was NBC came out with something like called like Pan Am.
Yep.
Or something that was about like sexy stewardesses in the 60s. And then like there was some other version of like Woodstock, and it was just all this stuff. And you know, then the movie Revolution Road came out. Like, there were all of these kind of things that the 60s became kind of a hot commodity, or at least the late 60s. And it was, and not only that, it was just, it was like, so if there was a brooding, dark character that smoked and drank a lot, then I got that script. And I was kind of like, that's my day job. Like, I don't, I love it. And I get to do it at a very high level, and I very much appreciate it. But it's my day job. Like, I would rather do something radically different.
Was any part of you like, oh God, I know what it's like to not work so much that maybe I should just take one of these things.
Like, the immediate instinct when you have that is to just grab everything with both hands and hold on for dear life. But I don't know. There was something, I guess I was older. I was 36 at the time, 37. Like, I was kind of like, all right, I got this. This seems to be going really well. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, Lorne Michaels came calling and said, like, why don't you host the show? And I was literally like, this has to be a prank. I don't understand. and I, yes. And in fact, I had to turn it down the first time he asked, because my then girlfriend at the time and I had planned this huge trip. Like, I'd never been to Greece. We had had planned this whole like 2 week long getaway. And it was like, we couldn't move it. Wow. And I was like, well, I get to say no to Lorne Michaels.
Sean will never go to Mykonos again. Tell him what happened, Sean.
Yeah, Sean.
What happened, Sean?
Jesus.
Yeah. You didn't know me too well.
I love the highlights.
John, it's funny. Mad Men was and remains such an incredibly, it's one of those shows that really changed, I feel like, in a lot of ways, changed TV, changed the way that people look at TV. Was one of incredible, incredible writing, and you were so incredible in it. And I'll tell you, here's a testament to how great you are. You were in that part, and you are, because it still lives on. When I actually started watching it in earnest, I had already known you a few years, and then started watching it and was completely immersed in it and could not get enough of it, and watched absolutely every episode all the way through to the end, and was really profoundly moved by your performance as Don Draper, honestly.
Yeah.
And it really, 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 truly. And
it's historical now.
Absolutely.
Did it change the way you acted around John when you'd hang out with him afterwards?
No.
For sure.
No, but yes, of course. But I think
way more deferential.
Way right. More. Let's hear what John has to say. I don't know.
He's my friend John.
My friend John is. John, do you want anything?
I mean, I wasn't going out, but I will. I will totally go out.
Okay. The kids are in bed and the doors are locked, but I'll get up. No, I'll get dressed. But you do something like that, that changes your life in so many ways.
Absolutely.
And it's at first scary, probably, and weird. Like you say, Lorne Michaels is calling you, and like...
And it didn't happen at 18 years old.
Yeah.
Right? I to this day, you know, Jason, God, your life and growing up the way you grew up, being famous since you were six, I remember you on Silver Spoons, I'll say it. I mean, and I was a fan. I was a fan early on. I was like, this kid's good. I get it. It changes everything, you know, and it really does provide an incredible amount of opportunity, but it comes with an incredible amount of, like, you know, caveat, you know, like, just be careful with what you wish for in a lot of ways. So, you know, we also came around, you know, the show really kind of got famous And I then got famous around 2007, which seems like not that long ago, but was a long time ago. Not only it was 15 years ago, but it was, that was the year they came out with the iPhone. Mm. Uh-huh, and yeah. I think it was maybe around the time that Twitter started. Mm. And then like 2010 was Instagram. And like all of these things were starting to kind of, like people's access to the internet became in their pocket and 24/7. And so that was kind of the blogging recap culture was just starting. So this idea of kind of actively engaged fans that could in real time kind of talk about the shows really came around right when we happened to get famous. So there was a lot of like serendipity and luck involved in our show's success. And it was, you know, it was crazy and it was a whirlwind and it was impossible to kind of not enjoy because it was enjoyable. It so rarely happens that you and we've all been a part of at least one, in some cases, several hits like that where you just, it's out of your control and you just have to hold on for the ride. And that's kind of what I did.
But getting that level of fame and respect and success in a profession at the age you are at is fortuitous, I would think. In that you've got the coping mechanisms to deal with something like that. Were you able to take some really beneficial parts from fame and incorporate it into your life in a healthy way?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is being okay with appreciating it, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of us, I think, that are want to like poo-poo it and play it down and be modest with it, which is also very healthy and good. But there's something very, I think, healthy about saying like, you know what? Yeah, good for me. Hooray. Yeah. Yay me. I didn't for nothing like work for 10 years with very little recognition or accolades or money or jobs or anything. Like, you know, when I landed in 95, when Sean and I landed in 1995, it took me 3 years to even get a job. So, you know, and it wasn't for lack of trying. I auditioned for everything. You know, my weird audition story was auditioning for Mimi Leader for Deep Impact, a part that eventually went to Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau,
And, you know, who to this day I still say I'm still a little angry at. I'm a little angry at him for beating me out for that. He had swingers. He's a writer. He had so much, and he
didn't need Deep Impact.
He couldn't back off and just give me that. I needed it.
No,
but
he could pay you back now. Give you some nice sweet arc on Mandalorian.
Some Mandalorian love.
Yeah, nice little tight little three ep arc.
Well, he's also he's the guy in all that stuff too, in all the Marvel stuff, isn't he?
He's Johnny Marvel. Come on,
isn't he the guy? Isn't he in those movies too?
He's Downey's
driver, right? Yes, chauffeur, getting his SAG benefits. You know what I mean?
Listen, he's driven Robert Downey, in the Iron Man trilogy, quadruple E.
Yep,
he's driven Jack Nicholson. Yeah, I think
truly
in As Good as It Gets.
Really?
Am I making this up?
I don't remember.
Was he a driver in that?
Was he in As Good as It Gets?
I don't know. I'll be honest. I might be conflating a lot of things.
I think you made that up.
John is a fun guy to act with. Have you guys done that?
No, but I obviously know him. He's a fun guy in general.
He is fun in a scene. Yeah. Very fast, very quick. And him and Vince together, well, that must have been fun to watch on the
set. Oh, man, yeah. I've met those guys. I live on the east side of L.A., and they're kind of credited with kind of bringing Los Feliz into the hipster world for sure.
Yeah.
The Dresden, the whole kind of swing, you know, the swingers scene was their scene for sure.
Right.
And when those guys walked into a bar in 1996, like you knew it. It was, they were very good hangs and they were very funny even then. And, you know, the proof's in the pudding. They both have very nice careers. So
we were talking the other day about, Jason and I were talking about Vince, about how fucking quick and funny he is.
There's just no one better at what
he's
does.
Fucking he's unreal.
Yeah.
And nobody does what he does, which is a nice place to be.
Yeah.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure,
I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell you, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye, Seps. All right, back to the show.
John, when you know, now that you worked your butt off to get to where you are, and in hindsight, it probably took longer than you wanted and longer than what you explained before. Is there anything that you tell younger actors going through it now, or any kind of businessy advice rather than acting, you know, technique advice that you know that you would probably pass on to anybody looking to make it now?
You know, I've talked to actually Jenna Fisher about this, who's also from St. Louis, who I've known for some time. I didn't know her in St. Louis, but we were talking about something for some reason, and it's funny, like, you can go to all of the acting schools in the world and nobody really teaches you about the business of acting.
Right.
And what it really is like, of course, like managing your day and managing your time and
your expectations.
Your expectations, for sure. Yeah. Like thinking about, you know, here's what it is to like drive into the Valley in August and then have another yeah. audition in Fox in yeah. an hour, you know, and it's, you know, it's a lot, and it's real. And it's actually the part of acting that most actors engage with from a professional standpoint far more than they do, you know, scene study or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's that part. And there's also just the fact that everything at this level moves so quickly, especially in television, that if you're not ready to go, if you haven't done the work before you get to work, then you're, it's not going to go well.
Right.
For one reason or another. And Will. I've seen it happen. I've been a victim of it, of just like, oh, I'll just wing it. And then you're like, uh-oh.
Right.
But it's a real lesson to learn. I'm just, you know, it's the first one I learned in class, is just like, be prepared.
I had an acting teacher too years ago. He kind of would profess this, and he was kind of a working actor. He was a character actor-y guy, and he'd lived in LA a long time. He had moved back to New York. It's like early
Charles Nelson Reilly or
early 90s.
Charles Bronson.
It was Charles Bronson. It was the
Chris Valance.
And we'd only do scenes from Fort Apache, the Bronx. But he would.
Wait, what?
But he.
Great movie. He wasn't in that.
Charles Bronson was. Sure he was. So anyway.
You had a lot to pick from, but I'm glad you picked that one.
Yeah, me too. He would say the same thing, which was like, if, as a young actor, if you get to set and you start going like, I'm going to work through my stuff, you're fired. There's no time to work through your shit. They got to get this shot and they got to move on.
Yeah.
And they don't give a fuck about what your process is and how you get there. You deliver. When they fucking call action, be ready. And I think that was like I had that at an early age, and I felt lucky, because I feel a lot of actors feel like, I'm just going to go and I'm going to work it out.
I'm just going to feel it.
Once they see how amazing I am, they'll give me all the time in the world.
Right. But it depends on what you want, right? If you want to be like, take Tom Cruise, for example. People are like, they didn't just hand it to him. Like he worked his butt off to be Tom Cruise. You know what I mean? Like,
and having worked with him, he is the first guy on set. He's in the gym at 5 a.m, call times at 6. He's there, he's ready to go, and he's the last guy that leaves. And it's, that guy deserves it. You know, he wants it, he got it, he works hard at it. And that's, you know, Jason, I know you've directed. Have you guys both directed television,
yes.
Sean and Will? Like,
it's
the same thing when you sit through those auditions and you think like, all right, the guy that comes, who's going to come in and take this part?
Right.
Who's going to come in?
So I can worry about something else.
So I can worry about something else. And by the way, so I can go back to the set. I got to shoot. Right.
And you watch
the guys that do it, that walk in and just say like, I don't have any questions, or I don't have any ridiculous questions. Not how you, hey, this is not 10 minutes of bullshit.
No.
It's like, let's do this and I'm going to prove to you how I can crush this. And then it's like, great. That's the guy I want on the day when I'm 10 hours behind.
Sean, you do that, but you haven't directed, but you go to the gym, you're the last guy there and the first guy out, right?
Yeah.
Very similar.
I mean, look at me.
So, John, growing up in St. Louis, did you spend any summers at the Lake of the Ozarks down there?
Yeah. In fact, my a good portion of my family has retired down there. My dad's sister, my Aunt Betty, lives down there full time now, and my cousin.
Is it true that there's a bar down there that does real well called Big Dick's Halfway In?
Whoa!
No way!
Is that a true story?
It's entirely possible. If I'm judging by the amount of and the quality of puns that I've seen and heard throughout the years in the Lake of the Ozarks, the Redneck
Riviera. Is that true, Jason? Is that a real bar?
That's a real bar, from what I understand, and it is a very high level pun. That is that they deserve to do a lot of business in there.
Jason, can we get a little something out of Marty Bird?
I don't change at all. This is a full Marty right now.
We hear a little something out of Marty.
This whole interview has been conducted by Marty Bird, I think.
We'd love to have a conversation with Marty Bird real quick.
I think it might go a little something like this.
Now, did you ever see any money laundering or killings or anything down there?
Very little, if any.
We're painting a pretty bleak picture of the lake down there.
There was a lot of bass fishing, a lot of water skiing.
Yeah.
And some pretty heavy drinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of very poor water safety.
Yeah. But you're not getting a murder a week down there.
No.
Yeah. We're taking a little license.
You know, fall out of the boat, hit your head.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I had my phone in my pocket. God damn
it. Yeah, a lot of that, for sure.
A lot of anger with that.
But not a lot of cartel guys walking down dirt roads with shotguns in the middle of the night, right?
You just didn't see it. And that doesn't mean it didn't exist.
Now, are they upset at us for painting that type of a picture?
I think any publicity for the Ozarks is good publicity at this point.
You know, they do need to lengthen the runway there so they could get some commercial flights in there and really open up tourism, darn
you're
it.
Speaking, you're preaching to the choir at this point.
Once you get down there and kind of ramrod something like that, huh?
Is that one of the other bars, the Ramrod, something like that?
The Ramrod does great business, but it's mostly on weekends.
And it's gay.
I'm sorry.
Mostly on weekends, thank you.
Johnny, what's your favorite best movie experience on a set or part that you played and experienced?
I will tell you, I've got it right here.
He's loaded with that one.
I worked on a movie called Bad Times at the El Royale a couple years ago.
Yes. Movie.
Directed by a guy who I've known for a long time. He used to write promos for the WB. I auditioned to be the guy that reads the promo next on the WB. Mm-hmm. That guy that Will probably got.
Yeah, sure.
No, I did CBS at that time.
Fair enough, fair enough. And so, and I got the offer for it during Sundance.
Yeah.
Came through, and they said, you got 48 hours to read this. It's yours if you want it. You got to be on a plane from Sundance to Vancouver. Let me know. And I read it, and I loved it, and I was like, cool. This is amazing. Who fell out, basically, because clearly somebody did.
No, John.
No, somebody did. It was fine. It was Russell Crowe. Whatever. Huh. Good replacement, I think.
Sure.
And it was to work with Jeff Bridges, who I've wanted to work with my entire
He's
life.
Amazing.
And I've always thought was maybe the
coolest
guy. You know, even pre-Big Lebowski, I was on board. I just thought
that's
he
That's no letdown, right? He's a real, nope, that's a high-level professional.
The best. And so I got to work with that guy for, I shot the whole thing chronologically. Spoiler alert, I die in the first act, but I shot all, you know, whatever 2.5 weeks of my part, and it was mostly with Jeff, and man, and it was a beautiful set. It was super cool. Everybody on it was nice. That was one of the good ones. That was really one of the good ones.
John, how weird. So you did this movie with the guy who was writing promos at the CW. What a trip for you guys, right? Did you guys acknowledge
and
that?
I knew him through like a little poker league that we played in. Like he hit the big time. Drew Goddard, and he's still making movies.
Yeah, he's doing very well.
I know Drew because he's Caroline Williams. He's married to Caroline Williams, who's a tremendous comedy writer. She's one of the funniest writers I've ever worked with.
There you have it.
She wrote on BoJack.
Good things happen to good people sometimes.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned auditioning to be the voice of CW. So the voice has been something that you've been using for a while. Then it sounds like, but you've really hit the top of the mountain there with Mercedes for how many years now?
I think going on 13 now.
John Hamm.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's great.
I've outlasted several CEOs and CMOs and
13 years. That's pretty good.
It's not
here he
bad.
Comes. Here he comes. Here he comes. Goes. It's not professional grade though. I mean, 13 years is good, but it's not professional grade.
It's not professional.
It's not professional grade.
It doesn't matter.
Oh no, I think people want to know.
I will say for the listeners out there, every now and again, I will get texts from both Jason and Will about some voiceover, something or other, which is it's a compliment, but it's a left-handed compliment.
No,
no,
always a you see you doing that too. Good for you. Good for you. Good for you. Real happy for you.
And let me tell you what else is a good, that Apple commercial that you do is killer.
That's
well
Come
done.
Come on, that's
and
been
it's beautiful. Who shot that, by the way? I want DP and director.
Another guy I've known for a long, long time through our mutual friend, Tall John Schrader, a guy named Wayne McClammy, who now is another guy that came
top
out
director.
Of the trenches at the WB.
No
I'm
way.
Not kidding.
Do you know who shot it? Do you know who the DP was?
I don't remember the name of the DP. I'm sorry.
Okay, wait. Johnny, before we let you go, because I know you got to go, I want to know what you're excited about coming up that's really getting you going.
I'll tell you exactly what I'm excited about because I've said it about 4 times today. I get to go to Europe for my birthday.
Oh.
I turned 50 last year, and it was during a pandemic, and my big celebration was having some people over and standing 10 feet away from them.
Yeah.
And I get to go, my gal and I get to go to the Alps for 2 weeks for my birthday. I've never been to Switzerland.
Oh,
that's exciting.
I've never been to that part of France, and I've never been to that part of Italy, so we're going to do it right. And
you're going
to
like that a lot.
I'm leaving in a week, and I'm very, very excited about that.
That's so exciting.
George can toss you the keys for the house in Como.
GC, baby, you got Como handy? Let me rock it out.
It's right there.
I promise I'll mop up.
Why not? And listen, you can pop down to Zermatt and, you know, where are you going in Switzerland?
Switzerland, Stade.
Stade, nice. Yes.
I just want to be like, I want to do like one thing James Bond did.
Right.
Like, yeah. I want to eat dinner in a like UFO shaped thing that you have to take a gondola to, and then you ski out for dessert.
Hey, are you going to get into Germany at all? You should get to Germany and have Mercedes give you one of their cars and drive on the Autobahn where there's no speed limit. Yeah, it's incredible.
I think that's a different trip, but yes, that's going to happen at some point.
I'll go on that one with you.
Okay.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Come on.
God, that sounds like
fun.
Let's
take this podcast on the road and do it German style.
But one more thing, and I know the personal life is way more important than anything we do for a living, but I'm just excited about you and your talent. And is there anything that you're excited that's coming up that you can share with us that you're working on or going to work on?
The most exciting thing that I have coming out, which will finally come out in May, is the long-awaited 30 years on sequel to Top Gun.
Nice.
You're in that?
Yes, I am.
Holy shit. Great.
And that's coming out, I think, Memorial Day weekend around there. And I've seen it. It's really, really good. It's exactly what you want out of this. And it's I cannot wait for people to see it. It was one of those things where another kind of pinch me moment, like just like, wait, they're asking me to be in the Top Gun sequel? Like, tell my 15-year-old self that. And
right.
Yeah.
I would punch my 15-year-old self in the face. Like,
yeah, that's healthy.
So, yeah.
Tom Cruise was not a disappointment either, I'll bet, right? Just
the
incredible.
Best in the biz, man. Yep. He's the best in the biz.
Yeah.
He's advertised. He is intense and hardworking, but that's exactly who you want.
Yeah.
That's what you want in a Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
I'll do a whole hour on that. That's awesome.
Well, I'm excited about that. Johnny, thank you for being here. I know you got to run. It means the world to us.
Best.
And thank you for saying yes to coming on. I'm such a big fan.
Thank you very much for having me. It's rare that I know all three podcast hosts at the same time. And it's
hopefully if Major League Baseball gets their act together, we can go out there and spend some quality time.
Jason and I have a lovely, friendly Cardinals-Dodgers rivalry that the Dodgers have had the better of the last few years. But
not really, barely. You still have Flaherty, though, you know?
Listen, we got the ring.
You give me him and all's forgiven.
Okay, I'll trade you for Walker Buehler.
I mean, with the high school out here. No. He needs to be with Walker. Oh, anyway, we'll talk. We'll negotiate something.
No. Please continue on with fucking baseball, man. Of all the fucking sports.
Yeah, let's end on baseball.
Well, we can end on the fact that I went on a blind date with Jason's now wife. We can all, but that's yeah. we. That's
wait,
for another
you did?
Wait, oh, wait, yeah. wait.
No, he's got to go.
In there really
guys,
fast.
I gotta go. That's the next episode.
Did you really go on a blind date with Amanda?
Ham, just wink at me. One wink means yes. Two means okay. Yes, fuck
John.
All right, John Ham. Thank you so much. Much, John.
Thank you, Johnny.
Great to have you. Ham, you're the best.
You're the best. Go Burrows.
We're going to end on the next time. All right, I love you guys. Thank
I love you,
so
love you buddy.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Man.
Thank
Talk
you.
Soon.
Bye.
John Ham is no ham. John is a very humble, classy, solid individual.
A solid individual, yeah.
Yeah, I was super excited that he was coming on. I mean, he's like one of those guys that's, you know, I say it all the time, but to about other people, but whenever he's in something, you're like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's got a real solid presence.
And I really meant it about Mad Men, watching that, and truthfully, like, thinking, like, kind of know him, and, like, this, how's this going to be watching him in this? It's kind of like Jason watching you in Ozark, which is also a testament to how good you are.
Yeah,
he's like, you get you. Into it, and you're like, you forget that you know the guy, which is, it's a higher bar to have to, a higher threshold.
I love that, yeah.
I know.
That's so true, like.
And that shows how good it is.
Jay, whenever I watch Ozark, it's transformative, as they say. So congratulations on that. Congratulations to John Hamm.
So,
successful.
Sean, also, what a great guest. So great having John on.
Yeah, he's got a new podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Does he have a new podcast?
Yeah, he's got a new podcast. It's called American Hostage, and it's on Amazon Wondery. It's fantastic. You got to listen to the trailer. The trailer sounds like an actual movie. It's really, really cool.
Ah, he's perfect for that.
It's really great.
He's perfect for that because he's so good. I meant it when I said, like, I watch Mad Men.
You would never think that a series about a pot store would last for how many seasons?
Oh, no, you're thinking of Mad Men, which is a pot store out here in California. Yeah. No, it's a different, It's a totally different, yeah. I mean, it's a very
So it's an anger management, like a help group?
It's just, honestly, I wish you could, it's just kind of a play on Madison Avenue guys of advertising executives. But it's like where they, you know, those ad executives, they come up with all the different slogans, like, you know, do this, or like...
You're thinking of like...
Bye, Menon.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.